Folks, I now call to order the this meeting of the Board of Supervisors of Blue Valley County. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. Do we have an adoption of the agenda?
Submitted.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Do I have to go by one by one, Fred?
No.
Okay, I didn't know if I did because we got so many people online.
No.
Okay, those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0 with Mr. O'Brien absent. Mr. Dahl, County Administrator's report, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, got a few things to report today. Got some things starting to ramp up a little bit here in the county, some events. So first of all, I want to just, we have some new employees starting. Wendy Edwards is a communications officer, started E911. She started March 29th. Jasmine Hankin, also a communication officer in E911, also started March 29th. Ellen Mayow, part-time library clerk, started April 5th. Stephanie Mayhew, a deputy treasurer in the treasurer's office, started April 5th. Then we also have Jessica Melton, a human services assistant for social services, started April 5th. And Rachel Lynn, a human services assistant for social services, started April 5th as well. We've got some new employees starting. And so we're going to try and, Ms. Snow has been sending these emails out with pictures to all staff, so we kind of see who started, and we'll just kind of give the board updates on new employees as well. Kind of in a partnership with the FSPCA and the Fluvanna County Sheriff's Office, there is a drive-through rabies clinic that's going to be Saturday, April 24th. It's going to be from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Fluvanna County High School. They're asking for a $10 cash-only donation to the FSPCA. They're asking for people that want to get their animals rabies shots to pre-register. You can either pick up a form at the FSPCA. The Sheriff's Office also will have them, or you can go to the FSPCA.org website, and you can fill out a form there. So again, that'll be Saturday, April 24th. In addition, on Saturday, April 24th, over at Pleasant Grove Park, we're going to be having the Fluvanna County tire drop-off and hazardous waste collection. So again, that's going to be Saturday, April 24th. It's going to be from 10 to 2 p.m. So this year, what we have, the tire drop-off section, and let me just kind of show you the map here. You know, just kind of a little flow. From 10 to 12 p.m., people can drop off tires right here up towards the front, and then those that want to continue on to go and drop off hazardous waste would then go to the back, and then they would loop on out, and then we'll have some overflow parking right there. So tire drop-off, 10 to 12 p.m., hazardous waste is from 10 to 2 p.m. Like I said, when trucks are full, we're going to close. Again, no commercial vehicles, no moving trucks, no trailers, must show proof of county residency, no electronics, no asbestos. Like I said, trying to make sure that we get as many people to drop off stuff as we can. So again, that'll be Saturday, April 24th at Pleasant Grove Park. Also, we just had, for Parks and Rec, had their Easter event at Pleasant Grove Park. So the event was held April 3rd, 2021, again, to try and keep some of the, trying to keep some of the traditions that we have in Fluvanna County alive. You know, with COVID, Parks and Rec changed things up a little bit. Instead of having, hundreds of kids intermingled just running about, we kind of Parks and Rec broke it up into some smaller fields, separated fields, kind of broke it up by age groups. So at 9 a.m. they had 31 to 3-year-olds and 21 4 to 6-year-olds. At 10:30 they had 17 4 to 6-year-olds and 19 7 to 9-year-olds. And then at noon they had 7 7 to 9-year-olds and 13 10 to 12-year-olds. So again, total, Parks and Rec wanted folks to register, so we made sure we had enough space, and we were keeping in coordination with what the state was pushing forward, restrictions on spacing. So there was 107 children that registered, and special thanks to the Interact Club members from Fluvanna County High School that volunteered to help out with that event. Also, if you've seen, so the county did have a controlled burn, prescribed burn as what the forestry calls it, over at Pleasant Grove Park. That occurred on April 5th, which was Monday. Monday, April 5th. So looking at the field, the shot right here, this is Field A. This is kind of in between the high school and the Pleasant Grove House. And then over here is kind of another field behind the soccer field. So they did about a third of the front field right here, and then they did the complete burn in Field B there. They had to stop kind of doing some of this out front here just due to some of the humidity levels. Each meadow burn took about 90 minutes. We were hoping that tomorrow they were going to be able to finish the burn here, but apparently with the direction of some of the winds, they're not going to be able to do that because they would be blowing right towards the high school. So with Parks and Rec starting to ramp up some of their, sporting events and stuff at the field, we may have to postpone the rest of that until the fall. But again, here are just some pictures of the prescribed burn. You can see right here they had a lot of the Virginia Department of Forestry folks out there setting the fires. They already had some of the fire lines with the dozers that they built. And again, this is just to kind of rejuvenate the meadow habitat that's there. And then here's kind of a good aerial shot. This was a shot that was taken in the April, over the winter. This wasn't burned, although it looks very brown. And then this shot right here is that one third of Field A that was burned, which is basically right in this area right there. Right down here? Right down here. So this area was right down there. So again, like I said, we got a good portion of it done, this recently, and then we'll have to work again to get some more of it done in the fall time. Just some announcements. So Route 56, Bremo Road Bridges, construction began on April 5th. We've been trying to put information out through different sources. I know VDOT's put stuff out. So the road will be closed to construction for the duration, and it's expected to last through September. Once construction is complete, bridges will be able to carry, all legal loads throughout the roadway. And they're actually doing two bridge projects, and they're running them consecutively so they can minimize the closure of that area as much as possible to do them both. And message boards will remain instructing drivers of alternate routes and detours. Mr. Rothmel and myself, we had a meeting with VDOT. This was last week. Firefly and Dominion. We had a meeting with them last week regarding expanding fiber into the Dominion territory. So one thing to talk about is Firefly's existing project, or CVSI, their existing project with the county, where they're trying to get all their existing customers done. They're still on target to hopefully have that project done by 2022. So that'll cover about 80 to 85% of the county that they will have access to Firefly broadband. Again, really what we're talking about, CVET covers about all this area with the exception of some of these red areas here. These are the Dominion territories. So really what we're doing, Dominion would own the middle mile, Firefly would own the last mile, and Firefly, with this kind of new program, Firefly would only expand into Dominion areas that are underserved. And underserved is categorized as less than 25-3. So again, as what we've noticed is the areas in red are what are considered underserved areas. And so really, you know, Dominion's looking to get fiber. Firefly wants to expand the network that they have going on. So what they're asking for counties to consider an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, that would allow them to start to study that area in red, to determine what a project would look like in the county between Dominion, Firefly, and Fluvanna County. They're not projecting to be any cost to this. You know, they're looking, there may be some staff assistance. But so really the steps and timeline is, one is the phase one would for the county to sign an MOU authorizing the project development study. So all that does is just look at the area and tell us what type of project they would do. Phase two would then Firefly and Dominion conduct the project development study. During that, they'll identify eligible areas, preliminary design, budget. Firefly will then present to the county project costs and potential funding sources to do that. And then if the county wants to move forward at some level at that point, then we could do so. After that, Dominion files with the SEC for approval, and construction could begin in 2022 for that project if we move forward. So just kind of looking for some head nods from the board. We don't have anything formal on this as far as the Memorandum of Understanding, but what we would do is, if the board is interested in having Firefly and Dominion do a project development study, and again, they're looking for all counties to do this, from you know, Louisa County, Orange County, I don't think Orange County is interested, but some other counties, Cumberland and what have you, that have a presence with Dominion and Firefly. They're trying to kind of do this from a regional approach. But again, does the board have any interest in moving forward with a Memorandum of Understanding?
Well, real quick, will you go back to the one where you had the red, green, right there?
Yep.
My guess is that's showing the green is already connected, the blue is what's yet to come, and then the red is what the Dominion area.
Correct. Yep. Yep. So the green and the blue is kind of the CVAC territory.
Right,
as
the blue has not been hooked up yet.
Correct.
That's what we're waiting to get hooked up.
Yep. The blue is the area that they're talking, that they're expecting to have completed by 2022. Mr. Rothmell, yeah. And what's
so,
up here?
So the blue is actually their reconnect grant that they received from the federal government. So green is what they're doing when the original project. Blue is that $25 million grant that they received last year. The light blue is the CARES project that we did, and the wishbone in the middle.
Yeah, right there.
And then red is projected underserved areas. So as you can see, you know, there's a portion that has no color. That's the portion of Lake Monticello that's Dominion. We know that has service, that's not underserved, because we know there's service there. So part of the project development study will be to finalize where are underserved areas. Because underserved areas will be eligible for grants and other opportunities. And that's really what they're trying to do. If you have service, that's great. You have service availability. We're trying to get to the areas that do not have service availability.
Right. The green in the middle of Fort Union, that is going to be Comcast.
Probably, yeah.
What about Central Link? Do they serve some of those underserved?
So they do. They have to hit that underserved, that 25-3.
Okay.
They're not always hitting 25-3.
Right.
But part of the study will be to not double, you know, there's no point of expanding to an area that has service.
Making sure that we get everyone covered first.
Correct.
Well, and they also want to make sure, because just because, let's just say CenturyLink is in an area, and say right now they have fiber going to the node, and you know, right there, say you get 25-3, but if you live a mile down the road, you're not necessarily getting that type of service. So there's going to be some finessing of kind of how some of this works. So those are some of the things in some of the project study too, that with Dominion, Firefly, staff, and other resources, we're going to try and determine who's underserved and who's not.
The study will have a tremendous outreach component, so people can tell us, these are my speeds.
Yep. And again, we're not, ad- D-
Dominion. We're just looking for head nods.
Yeah, Dominion Firefly, there's no cost to this.
Does anyone have a problem with this? I don't think so, Mr. Lieber.
So we bring it on to the next meeting. And so with that being said, we've got a meeting next week where we have a very light agenda. So if the board wanted, we could put this on next week's meeting if we want, since we have a special meeting to have just...
I don't think, since this is not going to cost us anything, and us getting broadband to our community as fast as we can, I don't think anybody's going to have a problem if we put it on there.
Yep, okay. Good. We'll add this to the next meeting. And then again, that was that. And again, fantastic. Tractor Supply is now officially open. They had their soft opening, I think it was the last week in March, but they had their kind of grand opening April 1st through April 4th. Here they had a kind of a real low-key ribbon cutting ceremony on this past Saturday. And again, Tractor Supply is located at 1418 South Boston Road, Palmyra, Virginia. They're open from 8 to 9 every day. Like I said, you know, we're looking forward to them being a good business partner and kind of expanding upon the great businesses that we already have. And I've already been in there and, you know, contributed some tax dollars to the county. So
that would make both of us.
Yep. And then just some next meetings here. So April 14th, again, next week, we have a special meeting, and it's for the public hearings for the FY22 budget and for the calendar year 21 tax rate, since we had a reassessment, and it's just the public hearings. And again, as I said, since those are really the only two topics we have, I may try to add just a few smaller items to that agenda. So if we're all coming here for a meeting, we can maybe get a few things done. Nothing overwhelming though, for sure. And then April 21st, we have a 7 p.m. regular meeting, and that's when the board adopts the fiscal year 22 budget and the calendar year 21 tax rates. And then April 28th, we just have this as a to be determined. If the board approves the budget April 21st, we don't need the April 28th meeting. So again, to discuss budget, we have some time this evening we can discuss budget. We have some time next week we can discuss budget, and then assuming the board wants to discuss budget, and then we have a little time prior to adopting the budget. And that's all I have for the board. Any questions?
Thank you very much, sir. All righty, I will now open the first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please step to the microphone, state your name and address. Keep your comments. Okay, well, let me finish my little thing. Keep comments 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Ms. Eager, you asked?
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Gilbody. I raised my hand on the app.
Well, and you'll be next, sir.
Okay, thank you.
I would like to address you as a citizen. I'm Patricia Eager, 1107 Beach on Creek Drive. On Sunday, April 4th, Easter, I got to witness the incredible skill and training of our fire and rescue volunteers, and their response was amazing. We had a chimney fire at about 9:30 that evening, and they were at my house within 15 minutes, the first responders, and they assessed the situation and went to work. They had to get access to the chimney. So my home is an old house built in 1890, and the farmhouse with a slippery metal roof, and the ladder truck was being repaired and not available. So they set 4 or 5 ladders together, and it was certainly a precarious situation. I have seen the ladder truck, and I wonder why does Spolana need the ladder truck after having buildings that tall?
Yeah.
Well, obviously now I know we need a ladder truck. And what I didn't know was that this house was once heated by only wood stoves and fireplaces in every room. And there's a bedroom with a built-in bookshelf, and behind the wooden shelf had been a wood stove. I had no idea. And when it was converted to central heat, the stove pipe was covered with a tin plate and secured with tape. The fire crew measured the extreme heat and broke through to discover this. Had they not found this and treated the problem, it's very possible our home would have burned in the night. And I want to thank the 22 volunteers, the fire and rescue department chiefs, for their service in responding so quickly. And I brought this to show you what they discovered, which I don't know how they did it, but they had a heat measure.
Tick.
I learned a lot about the fire department that night. Here it is. This was what was holding the fire back.
Yeah, and we have those in our church, and I'm glad to know that because it can be dangerous.
Well, this was dangerous because it was behind the wood wall.
Right.
And built in, and they didn't close up the chimney, so we had a real problem with that.
Wow.
I just wanted to thank the fire department, and I'd like to thank the volunteers. I have their names here, if you don't mind me telling you who saved my home. I'd like to thank the 22 volunteers who showed up.
Yeah.
And I would first say thank you to Jeff Potter.
Okay. The gentleman that spoke up?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Gilbody, and I'm an attorney, and I represent the interests of Quigley Properties, LLC. As the board may or may not know, Quigley Properties is attempting to develop a small subdivision in the Columbia District. It was originally going to be 47 lots, but after the developer had some discussions with some of the neighbors. That was then reduced by over half to actually just simply 20 lots. And the matter is referred to by community development staff as SUB 20-33. Now, the Planning Commission first heard this matter in its January 12, 2021 meeting. Unfortunately, and frankly, in violation of Virginia law, SUB 20-33 was considered by the commission as part of a public hearing. At that time, the Planning Commission then deferred acting on SUB 20-33 until the March meeting. Now, prior to the March meeting is when Quigley submitted an amended sketch plan, and that had the smaller development that I talked about before, but going from 47 to 20 units. And I think very importantly, community development staff then prepared a report that did not cite any deficiencies whatsoever with the sketch plan. Now, pursuant to Virginia law, specifically Virginia Code 15.2-2286.1, that should have been the end of the analysis. The sketch plan should have been approved because that's what the statute requires. The Planning Commission unfortunately then again deferred SUB 20-33 at the March hearing, or at the March meeting, I should say, and it's going to be considered again at the April meeting. I was present at the March meeting, and I asked the basis for the deferral, and I was not given an answer. It was council suggested that I call and ask and discuss that privately, and I did, and frankly, that was not a discussion that was helpful, nor did I get an answer to my question, in my view. Although the veracity of my statements were questioned by council, and I was frankly taken quite a bit aback by that. In any case, on March 19th, I prepared and sent a letter to Douglas Miles noting that Quigley Properties appeals the decision of Mr. Miles to not approve the sketch plan dubbed SUB 20-33, and this letter was sent, as I indicated in the letter, pursuant to Fluvanna County Code section 19-9-3, and according to Fluvanna County Code section 19-9-4, this body, meaning the Board of Supervisors of Fluvanna County, shall hear such appeal within 60 days of such filing. So I ask on behalf of my client that I be heard, and I have an opportunity to present my client's case to this board at the May 5th hearing. And I ask that I be given at least 20 minutes to explain the facts and the law relative to this development and the laws surrounding a cluster development, which is what my client is trying to do and trying to develop. Virginia Code 15.2.2286.1 is very clear that cluster subdivisions are to be approved administratively by staff. And in this case, and unfortunately, SUB 2033 was considered as part of a public hearing, which was violative of Virginia state law. And likewise, it's clear that a locality is barred from requiring a developer from obtaining a special use permit to gain approval of a cluster subdivision, but that's what the community development plan or community development staff did and requested in their staff report for the January meeting. So that's where we are, and let's be clear, there was no deficiency cited in the March community staff report. And now I've reviewed the meeting minutes for the Planning Commission for the past few years. And indeed, I've looked at some of the audio recordings. I asked for some of those pursuant to FOIA so that I could actually listen to them. And it's very clear to me that the Planning Commission is aware of Virginia Code 15.2.2286.1. They've been advised that the statute does not give the commission latitude when reviewing a plan or a cluster subdivision, but notwithstanding that, they acted in a manner that I believe is violative of that statute for reasons that I'm at a loss to understand. Now, what I'm asking on behalf of my client is simply to be heard at the May 5th hearing and to have my client's case in appeal set on the agenda for that day. And I'm happy to talk to Ms. Caitlin Solis, who I understand to be the clerk of of your board, to set that up, if at all possible. And with all that said, I'm also happy to answer any questions you may have. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Put your 5 minutes up. Appreciate it. Staff will get in touch. Is there anyone?
Thank you very much, Mayor.
Is there anyone else wishing to speak at this time? Ms. Harris? Hearing none, I will now end the first round of public comment. We have no public hearing, so we'll move forward with our action matters. A, Community Service Award Resolution. Mr. Sean O'Neill Collins, Sr., Mr. Dahl.
And Mr. Chair, I'm actually going to have Mrs. Booker. She asked if she could read this. She's been on the CPMT, and Mr. Collins was as well, and I think it's just appropriate if she would. So I have the resolution up on the screen here for those, and then Mrs. Booker will read it.
Okay, I would like for Brian to stand. He is the Children's Service Act coordinator for the county, and Kim Bain. This resolution was put together by the Community Planning Management Team And on that team, we have Ms. Kim, who represents social services. We have Gary, who is a parent representative. We have Martha, who represents court service, parent health department. Cassie, she is a service provider. Jennifer, the school system, Aisha, Region 10, and she's the chair, and Moselle Booker. Resolution number 08-2021, Community Service Award Resolution, honoring Sean O'Neill Collins Sr. Whereas Sean O'Neill Collins Sr. has been recognized by Fluvanna County's Community Planning and Management Team and this community for his selfless devotion to the welfare of the children and families of Fluvanna County and beyond through Detour Mentoring. And whereas Mr. Collins served the community through his work while being a vendor representative on Fluvanna County's CPMT from 2017 to 2020, recognizing the value of having rural-based services available to Fluvanna County community. And whereas Mr. Collins collaborated regularly closely with multiple public agencies and private providers in Fluvanna County to ensure children and families served, received, and utilized the maximum levels of support for their success. And whereas Mr. Collins has been an inspiration and guiding force for multiple mentoring agencies that currently work with Fluvanna County children and families through the Children's Service Act program. And whereas Mr. Collins' spirit of service and personal investment in the community made Mr. Collins a true gift to Fluvanna County's community, set Mr. Collins apart. Mr. Collins' commitment and dedication to the children and families far surpassed the expectations of Detour mentoring role and working with families. Now, therefore, be it resolved, on this seventh day of April 2021, that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize Sean O'Neill Collins Sr. for his many contributions to the county as seen through his community service, civic responsibility, and innovation. The foregoing resolution was duly and regularly adopted by the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors at a regular meeting of the board held on the 7th day of April, 2021. Thank you so much. It was a privilege for me to read that.
Yes, ma'am. We need to vote on it now.
There is an actual motion to actually vote on the resolution, like I said, unless Ms. Mabe or Mr. Moeller want to say anything.
Would y'all like to add anything? I can just tell you right now, sitting at the bus ramp, he was always there waiting in the evenings, picking somebody up, and taking somebody somewhere,
yes,
and doing something for him.
Yes. Thanks, Ed. Mr. Collins was one of the first people I met when I started my position back in 2017. He was a regular fixture, a regular contact with my department. About a week go by where I would pick up the phone and I would hear his calm, gravelly voice saying, "Good morning." And after his passing, I mean, the amount of communities, just anecdotes that we heard from how Mr. Collins helped this family or provide support to for a particular charity was very inspiring. He leaves a huge, huge void in this county, in our program, and whoever is able to take his role is going to have some very big shoes to fill.
Thank you.
All righty. Ms. Booker, would you like to make the motion?
Yes. I move the Board of Supervisors, I'm misspelled there, approve the Community Service Award Resolution honoring Sean O'Neill Collins Sr. as presented. Second.
Motion been made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll move forward with B, Child Abuse Prevention Month Proclamation. Rocky Reed, DSS.
And just when you want me to go to the next slide, just let me know.
Okay. Good afternoon. I'm Rocky Reed. I'm the CPS supervisor of the Humboldt County Department of Social Services. Again, I'd like to acknowledge my director, Kim May, being here as well. April is the National Child Abuse Prevention Month. So I just wanted to give you all an overview of preventive social services and being the CPS worker. The mission of Blue Valley County Department of Social Services is to be a leader in collaboration with other community agencies to serve county citizens, promoting self-reliance, well-being, and the best possible quality of life. The vision is a community where individuals and families have access to support and protection, which promotes health, independence, and opportunities. So in Virginia, for the same fiscal year 2020, there were over 52,554 children were reported as possible victims of abuse and neglect in Virginia. 33,880 of those reports actually were accepted to be investigated by departments of social services. But the substance abuse report on sexually exposed infants is 1,294, and there's 25 cases of human trafficking in Virginia. With COVID-19 and child welfare, we did see a decline in the percentage of calls from educators due to students not being in school, but there was a slight increase in the number of cases from law enforcement. Also, in April 2020, the Department of Labor declared child welfare workers on the list of emergency responders and as a need for a response to COVID-19. And also included the link to the article in there. So if anyone wants to read that article, it's very interesting. Because while a lot of people, jobs just went to teleworking, the child welfare workers were still responsible for going out doing home visits, face-to-face, going to the hospitals, the jails, or whatnot. So we never got a break in doing our job. Next slide. So additional duties for CPS workers, we do family support cases, which are low to moderate cases for risk of children coming into care. There are monthly home visits that have to be done as mandated by the state. Also, monthly meeting with service providers. For in-home service case, there was a very high risk of case of the child being abused or being placed outside of the home. They're required at least monthly visits, service planning meetings, monthly meetings as well. Another service that is provided is outreach services. These are cases that are not valid, but we're able to give them resources. We may have a case where a family said that a family is not having an appropriate amount of food in the house. They have food, but not appropriate. So we're able to tell them about the food banks or help them sign up for the SNAP program. We do mandated reporter training. Actually, I have one with law enforcement next week with the schools. And we investigate in conjunction with law enforcement and Commonwealth Attorney. Also with CPS workers, we're on call during non-business hours and on holidays. Next slide. We have mandated state safe measures monthly reports. These are monitored by the Virginia Department of Social Services. So from the time that we get a report to our first contact, for the first time we document on the case, the referral time is open, is all put into the system and is monitored by the state. And we have monthly reports where we have to meet a certain percentage to be able to say that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing. Next slide. This is actually the February 2021, and I know it's hard to read, monthly CPS performance. And the state said on a time of the first contact of a victim, we should be meeting at least 88% of our victims within that time frame. Nevada is 100%. We met 100% of our victims in that time frame. And I like to say we also did that for March. February, the state standard for closing cases on time is 85%. Nevada had 100% of their cases closed on time. And we were only 8 social services out of our region that did that. And we did that again in March. Next slide. So let's talk about Nevada County a little more. These are the referral sources from the state fiscal year 2020. You can see where most of our referrals come from law enforcement and then by the school. We have a lot of referrals that came from counselors and therapists, the hospitals. Some people even self-report. So, but we had a total of 308 reports during that time. Next slide. Of those reports, the type of abuse that was alleged, we had one medical neglect. Mental abuse and neglect, we had 37 family assessments and 9 investigations. Mental abuse also includes domestic violence situations. I'm just wanting to let you know that. And the physical abuse, we had 30 family assessments and 4 investigations. Physical neglect, 61, and the investigations, 23. Sexual abuse is always an investigation, and we have 14 of those. And you can see of those cases, how many of them were founded, which means that it was proof that it happened. Next slide. This is the age group of the victims that we deal with during that time frame. Most of them fall between the pre-adolescents, the 4 to 11-year-olds. But as you can see, that they're a wide range between the under 4-year-olds because they are not able to talk about the abuse. Most of the time, those are physical things that we can see. But the largest age group is the 4 to 11. Next slide. So report child abuse. I have our phone number now. We have an intake worker to take calls during business hours. After hours, we contact the sheriff's office and also the 24-hour hotline. Anybody have any questions?
Sure. I got one really quick one. Sure. I saw you had the mandated training for the sheriff's office, Fork Union, the school system, and Everett. The Light Academy also has got quite a few. I don't know if y'all are mandated to go there.
Yeah,
that's the new school that's opened up.
Yeah, I can contact them and ask them if they want us to do it.
I just was throwing that out there because that's sure. Probably the other large group of students.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I always like to read your all's, you have, what is it, in fact, was the Federal Resolution?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Right. It just, I always like to read, and have to happen anyway. I hope people read that, because it really does state, you know, what you do.
Yeah, the proclamation.
Yeah, that proclamation.
Yep.
I like the, that proclamation. I don't know if it's printed anywhere else than here. I don't know if it's in the newspaper or not. But I think it really explains your commitment. And hopefully we can communicate that proposition a little wider. Thank you. We don't work very hard. Thank you.
Okay, do we have a motion?
Patricia, you want to do that? Okay, I move Urbana County Board of Supervisors proclaim the month of April 2021 as celebrating Children's Month in Urbana County and observation Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Second.
You got a motion made by Mrs. Ingram, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All righty. Next is C, resolution for transfer of fire truck. Ms. Toller.
Hello. Kent Store Fire has received a new fire truck. It was ordered as part of the 2019 CIP. And actually, they have just received it. I got the paperwork for it today, so it's just come in. And it's a picture of the 1992 Spartan Pumper that new vehicle is replacing. Next page. It is the general practice in Urbana that surplus property is sold at auction. In the case of this vehicle, Cartersville Volunteer Fire Department has asked that we bypass that auction and sell them the surplus vehicle as they have an emergent need in their community with limited resources to fill that need. While this is a variation on our normal practices, according to the Virginia Code, Urbana can make gifts and donations of personal property to any firefighting services such as Cartersville. The fair market value of the truck exceeds the purchase price, so the excess is considered a gift and or donation. I do want to make it clear, though, that while this is a variation on our surplus policy, we're not changing our surplus policy. This is a one-time alternative that we are doing for this community that has a need. We're not changing our policies.
And again, there's some other language, too. Cartersville Volunteer Fire is also a nonprofit organization,
yes.
So there's some consideration given from that standpoint.
How do we know that they needed that?
They have been working with Chief Pullen for months.
Working with him?
Chief Pullen and Kent Store.
Okay.
For months, asking about this and trying to work out a way to do this. And it is on Chief Pullen's recommendation that we're doing this.
What is the value of this?
Finding a value for a used fire truck is really difficult because they're all so different. You can't just look up on a used car website and see what some are sold for. Because they're custom made, because they're custom done for individual units, it's difficult. I can tell you a few years ago, I sold a fire truck for Palmyra that sold over $50,000 doing it on auction. Now, we could put this vehicle on auction and we could get $10,000 for it, or we could get, you know, $50,000, $60,000 for it. We really have no way to know what the actual value of it is until we try to sell it.
Is this in the best interest of Urbana County taxpayers?
So, Mr. Weaver, I can say this, you know, I think with the uncertainty of it, of what fire trucks are selling for right now, it's, I would say, to get a known purchase price for this fire truck, you know, could we maybe get a little bit more? Maybe, but we just don't know. We could get less, too. And I think to have a known amount that we can get for this truck, I think to help out a neighboring county, too, I think there's, as a nonprofit, I think there's some benefit to that.
I think our responsibility is, first of all, to help our citizens.
No, I agree.
That's first, and then help your neighbors.
No, I agree.
And this, the price that is being paid will be enough to finish filling up all the fire trucks for the new truck.
Well, I'm just concerned about the way this was done. That's concerned. I'm not saying I'm not going to approve it, but concerns me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we talked to the board about this, and they were fine moving in this direction. And like I said, if they weren't, we wouldn't have moved in this direction. We've normally auctioned stuff off, you know, previously, and you know, we don't sell that many fire trucks, so we don't really have a good baseline for what a fire truck goes for on an average basis. You know, Ms. Toller, she looked through Gov Deals to see what else sells out there, and again, this is just such a customized market. It's hard to get a real good idea of what something would like this would go for. I think we are in the ballpark of what is the fair market value of it, but it could be a little different.
But you really don't know.
No, we really don't.
I actually reached out to a service provider of ours that does services on our ambulances and some of our fire trucks and stuff like that, and asked them what they believe a fair price for this would be, and they couldn't even give it. There is just no way to put a value on a used vehicle like this because it's so customized. The value is what someone is willing to pay for it.
And did we base the $30,000 on what we paid for it in the beginning?
No. The $30,000 came out of discussions with Mr. Okay. Pullen and Cartersville.
Okay.
I think we all understand that. Truck is 29 years old.
Yes.
And what are the other alternatives? Do you roll it out or you put it in an auction, you get 10,000?
Yeah, I mean.
And like I said, I could put it on auction. I could get 10,000 for it. I could get 50,000 for it. You just don't know until it's done. And in this case, you know, Mr. Paul believes very strongly that Cartersville has an emergent need for it, that they need this in their community.
Mm-hmm. Does the auction service not allow you to set up a minimum?
I mean, they do. We can set a reserve. I tend to find that things that have a reserve set on them, people end up not bidding on as much. It's kind of a reverse psychology for a lot of people on auction. So I generally don't put reserves on items for that reason.
Yeah, I think we need to be careful in the future how we handle these things. I'm not saying anything's wrong here. It just bothers me because we do represent the taxpayers. And they paid for this, and they should get their maximum price out of it. And I don't know, like you said, it could be more, it could be less. I suspect it would have been more if there had been a concerted effort to get the word out. But I certainly don't know.
And I don't know either.
I can just tell you this much, Mr. Weaver. My neighbor bought a ladder truck. It's right about the same age for $3,500.
So that makes it all right then.
No, I'm just saying that's the only one I even know of as far as a used fire truck being sold. But I rode around Kent Store the other day. We literally now have two ladder trucks in Kent Store owned by private individuals.
I don't have any problem really. It's just gone outside the norm here. And I think it can raise questions when it's looked at. But the public, and certainly raises questions in my mind.
Well, again, and I came to the board with this because, again, it is a little outside the norm for what we've done in the past. And if the board wasn't comfortable going outside the norm, then we wouldn't have done this, and we would have done an auction like we normally do. But it's there's nothing, you know, it's legal and above board. It just, you know, it's not the norm.
And I'm challenging that.
And yeah. I trust Chief Pullen that he is going to do the right thing. He has a great deal of knowledge about fire trucks and situations. So for me, it's a good gesture. And I'm saying, Ms. Weaver, I'm trying to, we all have our opinions.
All right. Having all that, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve resolution entitled a resolution to transfer the Kent Store Spartan Fire Truck to Cartersville Volunteer Fire Department, transferring surplus property used by Kent Store Fire to Cartersville Volunteer Fire Department for the amount of $30,000.
Second. Got a motion made by Mrs. Booker and seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? and I will sit this out since I'm a member of Company 3, so it's 401.
Thank you.
Thank you. D, Central Absentee Precinct Location Change, Ms. Pace.
Ms. Pace, when do you want me to go on the next slide? Just tell me when.
Good afternoon.
All right. The one for the next meet. So everybody's aware that the registrar's office serves as the absentee and early voting precinct for the 45 days prior to each election. So just to give you a heads up on what happens in that process, since we've now moved and relocated to Lake Monticello, on Monday, prior to election day, the registrar or staff, we have to disassemble the voting equipment and box up and secure all the unused and used ballots and all other election-related paraphernalia for transporting to the historic courthouse. Previously, because we were across the street, the election officers would just come over on election day morning at 5, and we would all transport it across the street. So now it's different. Next slide. Now, the CAP, which is the Central Absentee Precinct, those officers retrieve those items and transport them to the historic courthouse, where they have to set the courthouse up, stage it for a precinct, just like every other precinct you see when you go in to vote. They reassemble the voting equipment and process the remaining ballots and ascertain the vote totals when the polls close on election night. Next slide. So upon completion of the statement of results and submitting that the results to the office, to the registrar's office, the election officers have to disassemble the voting equipment and take down all the election paraphernalia and transport that paraphernalia back to the office. Next slide. When the registrar's office is relocated away from the county seat and the historic courthouse, a disconnect in the flow of election operations occurred. Next slide. For example, communicating or communications with the election officers has become difficult. Reason being, the historic courthouse does not have phone access, nor is it technologically secure for what is required for the CAP and the registrar's office on election day. Transporting equipment, election equipment and ballots from the 45 days of absentee and early voting is costly in manpower and man hours, and it is not secure. Next slide. The registrar's office and staff, we have to travel from Lake Monticello to the Palmyra Post Office to pick up ballots, return back to the registrar's office to input that data into the state's computer system or data system, and then we travel back to the courthouse to deliver those ballots to the OEs and return to the registrar's office during the course of the day on election day. Each trip is 14 miles round trip. Also, those ballots delivered to the registrar's office, either by voters or those in the drop boxes on election day, are required to be processed in our office before they're delivered to the CAP, which is at the courthouse at this moment. Next slide. Having the central absentee precinct in the registrar's office on election day would reduce response time, alleviate moving equipment, and help maintain proper security, thus improving the overall efficiency during the election day process. Thank you. Any questions?
And again, this item right here, since we're proposing to move the central absentee precinct, it's an ordinance change and listing the place of the CAP. So again, we're asking the board to authorize staff to advertise for a public hearing, which would be on May 19th, which would be in plenty of time prior to the 15 days needed prior to the June 8th election.
I move the Board of Supervisors authorize staff to advertise a public hearing on May 19, 2021, entitled An Ordinance to Amend Chapter 2, Article 2, Section 2-2-3B for the Fulani County Code to designate as the central absentee precinct the office of the registrar on Myra, Virginia, in place of the historic courthouse.
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. Any other comments or questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. E, 2021 strategic initiatives, Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, I'll kind of go through this. So again, you know, the strategic initiatives, they were built from remaining items from 2018 to 2019 strategic initiatives. And one incorporates supervisors, concerns, and things that the board brought up during the February 10th planning retreat work session. It also kind of incorporated some of the citizen survey too, a little bit of what the board heard. Again, it maintains, since this is kind of a short 9-month strategic initiatives, it maintains the same categories in previous years. So let me just pull it up really quick. And like I said, I'll be happy to take any changes from the board, but again, a lot of these right here, A1 through A5, those were ongoing from previously. The new ones that I think were A6 and A7, which is implement an annual county volunteers recognition ceremony and then assess the need, that's spelled wrong, assess the need for a professional fire chief position.
At the Monish Gate, has anything been done there?
No, Monish Gate, no, that's still a discussion. You know, I know from VDOT's standpoint, they were going to look at the Monish Gate after the roundabout was completed. Now that the roundabout's completed, there may be some further discussions on what happens.
They also talked about the roundabout would slow everybody down, but it's a half a mile from the roundabout to the Monish Gate.
Yeah.
So people pick their speed back up.
You can pick up in half a mile.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Even in the driver's edge.
Yeah, that's exactly. You know, I know some of those have already been on, but some of them, to me, the wording doesn't say that it's going to be done, or when, like, for example, continue to research and evaluate, probably not a good one, but continue perform strategic review of existing needs and so forth. It's another word to start it off so that I know that it will be done, unless you're going to have an implementation schedule somewhere to say when will we get this done, who will be pushing it forward, then it's just, to me, it is a good statement, but it doesn't help to say it's not complete.
So from,
you know what I'm,
well, it's from speaking from a timeline, I mean,
yeah.
Again, some of these, when the board did this with Mr. Nichols in 2018-2019, again, we didn't do it in 2020, there was a pretty robust list there of things that happened that were on the list. So again, these are supposed to be done within by the end of 2021 is the goal. That's the goal and the timeline.
This is a year?
Well, but now at this point, it's 9 months since we're, you know, three.
And I think the other ones was 2 years. Right?
Well, yeah, they were generally 2 years. So if you remember, 2020, we had a lot of items that were outstanding. COVID kind of came and that kind of changed the whole goal line completely for what we were doing. And so the board just kind of wanted to keep with what we had outstanding previously for 2020. So again, we came back to kind of come up with some finality on some of these things and try and get them across the line and get them finished by the end of the year. Doesn't mean they're all going to get done, but that's the push is by the end of this calendar year. And again, that's, you know, it was always based upon the 2-year cycle for when there was a potential change or election for board members. And again, we would, in January of 2022, calendar year 2022, we would come back to the board, do another work session, and determine what does that board want to do for the next 2 years.
Okay, talk to me about A3.
So yeah, so reviewing the existing need for partnerships. I mean, really, we have a lot of nonprofit groups. We have a lot of different just partnerships that we deal with on a daily basis. I mean, so I know, like, for instance, you know, Kelly from the county standpoint, she sits on the IAC meetings. There's lots of discussion that happens in IAC meetings that we pick up on from, I don't know, just things, whether it's, you know, coordination with what, you know, the Blue Ridge Health District's doing. Another example, the Arts Council contacted us the other day about trying to implement it and do some other things. So again, it's looking at what organizations do we have, and you know, just determining, you know, do we need additional partnerships? What can we do to make certain things happen in a better way? Because from county staff, we don't have all the expertise on staff. There's other agencies that certainly have that.
And who's going to do that?
Who specifically?
County? Yeah. Is there anybody specifically?
So no. I'm going to point down there, partially specifically.
I know Kelly's at the
IAC. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Kelly has a lot of coordination with some of our outside agencies, so.
Yeah. Because we talked about during the budget season in the last couple of years, we have just kind of level funded them.
Yep.
And not really raised anything.
Well, it was also discussed from the board during this last budget session too, and I know some other localities doing this, you know, get a committee to really look at the budget request and,
right,
and, you know, put a little more due diligence in what's there. So I certainly, you know, we have a lot of great nonprofits and local agencies and organizations that support the county in a lot of different ways. So that's it under A1. Under B, the only new item was create a frequently asked questions page on the county website, and this was kind of changed a little bit from having kind of like almost, for lack of better words, a blog, a back and forth comment blog, which it is just not conducive for our operation.
Will we meet the pastors quarterly, or will we just do it whenever we can?
Well, again, that was so.
That
so,
one kind of got shot down when COVID came along.
Well,
and slowed down anyway.
Yeah, and I don't want to blame that one necessarily on COVID, because that one, I mean, again, B1 and B2 were there from when the board adopted it in 2018 and 2019. So that one's been there for a while. So, I mean, I would like to see maybe once things open up, maybe it is a quarterly or a twice a year or something, but understanding what are better and what are best ways to get information out to the community that maybe is not connected electronically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, you know, the thought behind that. Under project management, everything is really the same. We have lots of outstanding projects, and again, I think we had a very robust project list before, and really the only one on here that is actually new is C8, you know, long-term accessibility for water and sewer and CPAs, but really we're kind of doing this with a lot of the other stuff. But again, this is kind of more big picture stuff. Under community development, economic development, tourism, really, the three new ones that the board brought up were D7, D8, and D9. You know, implement stronger code enforcement on the county spotlight abatement program. You know, we are starting to get complaints and citizen complaints coming forward. You know, the board talked about review of subdivision ordinance on cluster subdivisions. And then certainly, you know, we talked about zoning ordinance to look at higher density options between CPAs and R4s. So those were the three kind of new ones that were discussed. Otherwise, the other ones were kind of there. And under financial stewardship, really the one that is new is, and you know, we've kind of addressed this with the budget a little bit, is somewhat plan for ways to adequately fund, implement, and standardize the capital improvement plan, eliminating deferred CIP projects. You know, with this big debt issuance, that gets us moving forward, but we got to find a way to take that to the next level and kind of figure out how do we continue that so it just doesn't get, we don't get back up into the corner again. So those were the new ones. Everything else was there existing. A lot of these things are moving forward, and we're really hoping that a big chunk of this strategic initiative we can check them off by the end of the calendar year, but there's certainly no guarantees.
I just don't see how you can address them if you don't have at least somebody responsible, and that there's a reporting system that comes back that we can see where we're moving.
Well,
we all put input and we know we're carrying things over, and
well,
we want to move forward. You can't do them all.
No, I mean, and so really, I mean, each of these kind of fall under a very kind of key area for the most part. So one, internally, from you know, the staff standpoint, we are going to assign each one of these things to a staff member or a director that they have to look after these. Like, you know, strategic initiatives, Kelly's kind of led some of that piece. Mm-hmm. And she'll be coming back to report on, you know, where are we. So what we have here is just the big, here's the strategic initiative, but, you know, moving forward, we're going to have, okay, who's the staff contact, and then kind of where are we, what's moving on with this, what's happening with it.
Okay.
Yep. So is there anything that the board just does not want on here, or is it fine to approve as is?
Anyone? All righty. So do we have to do a motion?
There is, yep.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the 2021 strategic initiatives as presented.
Second. Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move forward with the FY21 CARES Act budget transfer for CSA. Mr. Muller.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay. So we are requesting $6,500 to implement a service for our department called DocuSign. Just to give you a brief overview of what it is, it's effectively an online service that provides us the capability to have documents signed electronically. My department is. I have to obtain a lot of signatures. I get them regularly from our CPMT on a monthly basis. I get them from our FAP team on a bi-weekly basis. And I get them from vendors. I get them from case managers. I get them from our county administrator. And that takes up a significant amount of time. But so by doing it electronically, it provides the person that needs to sign the case or the signatory the time or the convenience to sign when it's best for them. Also reduces a lot of downtime either from mailing things or trying to arrange meetings to interface with people. So all those physical barriers that are listed there are the ones that DocuSign really helps address. It's also fully compliant with state and federal statutes regarding electronic signatures, including the Uniform Electronic Signatures Act, as well as being compliant with federal HIPAA regulations. Next slide. So when we're talking about, so the reason why I think for CARES funding is that, unfortunately, it's very difficult for me to get certain signatures because there are certain agencies, vendors that will not meet with me because of their COVID restrictions that they've imposed on their own agencies that really hampers productivity and efficiency of getting payments to providers and getting services started for the children and families that we serve through our program. So CARES Act funding could help address that, as well as address any potential other lockdowns that may happen for future outbreaks or pandemics. Now, to highlight with this, I want to show you how we currently do things with three different tasks, as well compared to how we do it now, and how we're projecting it would look with DocuSign. So the first one is a purchase of services orders. So before anything can start, the vendor has to sign this purchase order that allows us to, or that says we're going to be paying you this amount of money for these amount of services. So when that happens, I generate the purchase order through one program I have, and then it takes 1 to 2 business days to get signatures locally. That free purchase order, I have to get 3 signatures. One from the case manager, that could be from one of 4 different agencies, one from the CPMT representative for that agency. If I'm lucky, I can get them at the same time. 40% of the time, I'm not so lucky. As well as the fiscal officer. Sometimes that's me, sometimes it's our CPMT fiscal agent. And so that's another meeting that I have to arrange for each individual for each purchase order as well. Once that's done, I then have to mail the purchase order to the vendor. Before that though, I also have to copy the purchase order, I have to log the purchase order in 3 different systems as when it's going out, and I have to file my copy of that purchase order. So it takes up a lot of man hours, even before it gets mailed out. Then when it gets mailed out, it can take 3 to 14 business days to get to the vendor because we are totally dependent on the United States Postal Service, which prior to the pandemic was fairly reliable, but as the pandemic has progressed, USPS, unfortunately, has not been quite as efficient as it could be, or as productive as it could be. So I have had purchase orders take up to 45 business days in some cases. Those are rare cases, but it has happened, and it causes a lot of stress between my office and the vendor. Now, with DocuSign, however, when I generate that purchase order, I upload that to DocuSign as the next step. As soon as that's done, it goes out to the case manager who signed it, it goes to the CPMT representative who signs it, then it goes to the fiscal officer who signs it, and finally to the vendor who signs it. Once the vendor signs it, I get a copy for myself. In a best case scenario, I can create a purchase order by 9 a.m. and have it all signed and ready to go by lunch. But we're busy people, we have busy lives, busy routines, so we're estimating that, worst case scenario, 2 business days. That's a vast difference from the 13 to 45 business days that we're looking at with the current process. Plus, all those steps I have to do get eliminated. I don't have to meet people, I don't have to mail anything out, I don't have to prepare the mail. I literally upload it to DocuSign, and that's it. So then look at invoices. So once the purchase order goes out, I also send out invoice forms that each month that they have to complete and send back to me. When I generate that, I generate the same time as the purchase order, but then I have to wait for the purchase order or for the invoice to go out, the invoice to come be mailed back. Then I have to set up other meetings with with my case managers and my CPMT representatives to get these signed. If I'm lucky, they happen at the same time. 40% of the time, they do not. And then once that's done, then I can pay that. But it takes 8 to 33 business days for that to happen. Some vendors can't wait that long for that money, that amount for that payment to go out. It takes us 400 hours per year for me to do that. The DocuSign, same thing. Once at the end of the month, the vendor completes the invoice, gives me all that documentation I need for auditing purposes. Very, very much like a one stop for all those needs. It gets immediately sent to me. I look at it, approve it, forward it to the case manager, signs off on it. It gets back to me. Again, if they send to me by 8 a.m., I could have it ready to go by lunch.
So we'll pass this one. I mean, you get the idea. It's going to be a huge time saving and a huge just benefit. Like I said, CSA is very paper intensive, and they have to obtain a ton of signatures and a ton of coordination, and this is just a smart way to do business for as many documents that go through that department and all the different agencies. And again, Mr. Moeller's been so nice enough to kind of be the test case for Fluvanna as a whole to kind of do this too. But for him, he's got a ton of documents, and this will be a big time saver.
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking at this, about 575 hours and 9 hours.
Yep.
I could do a lot in 3 months. So yeah, that would be a huge time saving, to save nothing of the amount of money saved from salary, as well as postage and office supplies that I have to use just to mail these things out.
And we're able to use CARES money for this?
Yes, we can.
Now, to
be totally honest with you, like I said, we can use CARES funds right now. Doesn't mean we can always use CARES funds for this. I mean, there is...
Next year.
There is an ongoing cost to this, and it's going to probably be about $5,000 a year, $5,55 a year.
Between $5,000 and
$6,000
a year.
It's not an ongoing cost. There's ongoing savings to this.
Well, there is. Yes, Mr. O'Brien. Well, Mr. O'Brien says yes. There is a huge... There's a huge savings from a manpower standpoint. There's a savings from postage. There's a savings from, you know, if Mr. Moeller has to get in the county vehicle to go drive somewhere and fuel, we'll meet someone. So yes, we're allocating the cost differently. We're actually able to get more work done with what we're doing.
All righty. Are there any other questions? Do we have a motion?
Yes, I move that the Board of Supervisors approve budget transfer of $6,500 from the FY21 CARES Act contingency line to the FY21 CARES Act contract services line for the implementation of DocuSign.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Seeger and seconded by Ms. Booker. Are there any other questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you very much. Next is G, Carris Brook Elementary Roof CIP, Mr. Striblin,
and
Mr. Hampshire.
Yeah, I'll just give the board just a quick overview, and then Mr. Striblin can chime in. This is a little different than how we normally do things, but so from the Carris Brook Roof Project, which was kind of an ongoing project for the Carris Brook School, and then it went to a roof project. Their project came under budget by $88,527. That was what was left in that project. Mr. Striblin is asking for that $88,527 to be transferred to a new, different CIP project for Fluvanna Middle School. Fluvanna Middle School, I guess, over the administration office, has some leaks, has some issues, and then there's some issues with the windows and how the roof meets up to the windows. So that's the request. And Mr. Striblin, if you want to chime in and add to that, please.
Sure. Good evening, everyone, and thank you. Basically, we came in under budget, like Mr. Dahl said, and the money was there. So what we would like to do is, we've been having an ongoing issue with the Fluvanna Middle School quarter of the roof system that covers the administrative offices and guidance offices. And we would like to take those monies and construct and replace and repair the current roof system at Fluvanna Middle School. So just switch from Carris Brook Elementary to Fluvanna Middle School roof system.
And Mr. Striblin, just one question, and this, because I wasn't involved. When the middle school roof was done previously in, I guess, 14 or 15, this part of the roof wasn't addressed?
No, sir, it was not. It was sectioned off, and we did it in sections, and this part of the roof was not addressed. So that's why it wasn't under warranty.
I'm going to guess this is the section that's over top of our main office.
Yes, sir.
So that's the newest part, isn't it?
Well, the newest part of the building, but not the new roof.
Yeah.
Oh,
the roof was redone.
Yeah.
Trust me, when you go in there and they have trash bags covering up their computer sitting on the desk, it's not a good situation.
And this is already an existing CIP project. It just hasn't been.
Yeah, the 88,527 was in an existing school.
No, I'm sorry. Request to fix the roof at Carris Brook
No.
and the windows. It's not an existing.
No. This is not an existing project. It wasn't in the CIP. It wasn't asked for in CRM or anything like this. This is something, I guess, new that popped up.
Or is this?
How was it that we overestimated so much on this that we got back like $88,000? I'm just curious how we got that much back on the project.
You'll have to ask the schools when they requested the CIP amount for the estimate. When they put the bids out, they came under significantly, and that's, like I said, we don't necessarily. Yeah, Mr. Striblin, you want to answer?
Sure.
That?
So So we would like for it to be a more exact science, and I would like to say that all of it is because we're good fiscal agents of the monies, but when you're doing a project, obviously I believe this was $750,000, there are things during the process of construction that can be detrimental and positive. In this particular case, we were able to work with the contractor to come in under.
And normally from my standpoint, if they were asking for this for a new CIP project for something that wasn't fixing something that needs to be replaced, I would probably recommend, I would not recommend it. But like I said, that's up to the board. But since this is, I mean, whether this goes back into fund balance and then they ask for this out of their CRM or they use their existing funds, if we have a leaking roof, it probably needs to be taken care of. And so this is not something that we're like, we want to build a brand new tennis court or something like that with leftover funds. This is something to keep our buildings in the shape they need to be.
Okay, you want a motion on it?
Yes, sir.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the transfer of $88,527 from the Carysbrook Roof CIP to be used on a new roof and window CIP project currently needed at the Fluvanna Middle School.
We have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. I can promise you I will have some happy bosses.
Thank you very much.
I hate to say it that way, but I'm telling you, Mr. Weaver, literally you would walk into the office if we were having a rainstorm and they were grabbing trash bags and literally covering every computer in the main office. And
could you put a pan under it or something?
You probably could, but I'd hate to be typing on a computer with the water going into it. Next up is presentations. H, Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Council update. Mr. Rothmel, lay it on me.
Good afternoon, board. For the EdTech update, we'll have the chairman, Mr. Andy Sorrell, kind of go through everything for you, and I'll add any commentary. Andy's got this under control.
And Mr. Sorrell, when you want me to go to the next slide, just let me know.
Okay, sir. All right, good evening, everyone, and members of the Board of Supervisors. Thank you for your time this evening. We are, I'll briefly go over what the EdTech, Economic Development, and Tourism Advisory Council has been up to since the last time we checked in with you in October of last year. Next slide, please. As you can see, we've got about 12 members, and EdTech, just for the public that's listening in, is a group that advises, assists, supports, and advocates for sustainable economic development, tourism policies and programs and activities in Fluvanna. We also help maintain a countywide perspective in support of a diversified economy for employment creation, higher paying jobs, and expanded revenue base for local government services. So, as you can see, we've got about 12 members. We are currently have a vacancy on the chamber rep. We had a member who unfortunately resigned from the chamber, and so that position is open again. So, other than that, we are in pretty good shape. Next slide, please. So, what we've done since October and starting in October, we, with Brian's help, we did some photo competitions. We did Float Fluvanna, and you can see that picture of I think that's near the dam at Lake Monticello, Brian. That was Tom Smedley that won that photo contest. And this is on social media and things like that. Again, ways that we can continue to get Fluvanna's name out there on social media and that type of thing. Then we had, about a month or so after that contest, we had all Fluvanna pictures, and Jamie Preitzer was the winner of that one. And that was something that was really helped get some good feedback on places in Fluvanna. Next slide, please. We've also been doing the, with Ryan's help, the Buy from Fluvanna campaign, which is another way to better highlight the utilization of Fluvanna County businesses. And as Brian has said, this is sort of like a halo highlight for a couple of days to focus on that particular business with a blog post on the Fulgana website, visit Fulgana website, I believe, as well as a social media boost and just, a focus on that for several days. And I believe we've done a couple of businesses so far. Brian, can you remind me what the businesses are we've done?
Yeah, so there's an event coming up. For example, there's going to be an event, Spring Into the Village. Just wrote a short blog post about their event that's going to be on Sunday. We put it on our Visit Fulgana Facebook page. We boost it for the next couple of days. And it's been a really big help to take an event that might have gone out to 1,000 people and get it in front of 1,000 people per day. And we're seeing good results from that, and it's just that it's an easy way for us to promote more businesses. One of my favorite examples is Plants and Things on Union Mills. Mm-hmm. I drive by that on my way to work. I saw that they were going to be opening, stopped, took a quick picture, and wrote a little blog post, posted it on Facebook, and that got shared 15 times because Plants and Things has been in Fulgana for so long, and everyone's like, oh, I'm so excited to see that they're reopening. If you're not driving by Union Mills, you might not be aware that they just started their season. So just kind of simple ways to get people to interact with businesses from the county.
Thank you, Brian. And on that same discussion topic, we also have the Fulgana 365 campaign, which is not just business-based, but a Fulgana picture or video a day, each day in 2021. So Brian has an example right there when that big cargo ship got stuck in Suez Canal. He made up a picture of what it looked like in comparison to the high school he had so in Fulgana. So anything that we can do to continue to get Fulgana's name out on social media is a win for the county, because we want to draw people here, and so that's what this has been about. And moving along, next slide, please. We have fairly active activity for Black History Month in February. We had several Black History facts throughout the month. We had some podcasts of influential African Americans from Fulgana. Two have been posted so far with Ms. Armstrong, Rebecca Armstrong, and Carmen Smith. And I believe some others have been done with Ms. Key and Ms. Carter. Those are not yet released, but those will be released soon. But we also had a release of a African-American family recipes from Fulgana. That was the brainchild of Nina Monroe and Brian Rossmull from the Ed Tech Committee. And they really worked hard to pull this together. And I believe this year was a digital release of it, but perhaps next year can be an actual printed release. And this was fun. We got to actually have recipes from Fulgana that African American families have historically used and used Fulgana things to make. And so that was really fun. And again, that was something that is something we can share with other folks in the county and all throughout the county. So that was a fun event. Moving on to the next slide, just what's coming up this year. I think we're getting to the end of our tourism strategic plan timing period. So I think that was through 2018 through 2020. So we'll be giving some new thought to this year as to what that will be for the next couple years. But we've definitely been working our way through the four main goals that we have for the current plan, such as doing our tourism marketing strategies, doing better branding. Brian's been really great with that. We have a certified visitor center now at the Welcome Center at Pleasant Grove. Brian is in the Economic Development Authority. We're really helpful in getting the signage up at Pleasant Grove. Some things coming up this year. We could definitely work to improve wayfinding signage in Palmyra, our two Palmyra signs, like the ones that went up at Pleasant Grove. We want folks to understand where things are in Fulgana, and that when you leave Lake Monticello or you leave Pleasant Grove, you can turn left and come and visit other parts of the county rather than going into Charlottesville all the time. We're still working on the love sign. There's been, you know, hold-ups in that and trying to get that pulled together in terms of volunteer labor and all of those things. But we'll get that done eventually. You know, the biggest thing, though, is, you know, continuing to tell the complete Fluvanna story is coming up with different and new ideas, driving tours, things that can, people are in Fluvanna, whether they're at an Airbnb or they're doing a visit to a family member in the county, or they're coming to an event at Pleasant Grove, county fair. We want them to know that there's more things to do. You know, pop up your phone and do a driving tour of some historical sites. Do other things that enjoy these three rivers that we have in Fluvanna, the Hardware, the Ravanna, and the James. You know, there's lots of great opportunity to continue to gather tourism dollars for the county and then also have folks that live in Fluvanna spend more of their free their income, spend more of their dollars that they'd be spending at other places here in the county by letting them know about what's available and what we're doing. Brian has developed a really great reboot of the Visit Fluvanna webpage, and his business directory, and key to a map, and just all kinds of great resources. And I do want to give a great shout out and to the great job that Brian's been doing. He's really helped the community a lot, giving us great guidance on projects that we can do, keeping a fire under us to make sure we get those things done, and really just you know, making sure we're using our best assets, which is our networks and our experience and our ability to be residents of the county, to our best advantage. And so we're also looking to, you know, help out with the county fair this year. You know, a good example of some of the recent discussions that we had in our last meeting was there was somebody who brought up the comment that, oh, we could really use some more artisans or more vendors, artisan vendors for the fair. And we had Erica Mitchell from Tweedar on the call, and she said, oh, I've got a list of 60 vendors. Let's connect them with fair folks so we can make sure that they're part of this. So, you know, it's really about working together with economic development, the Economic Development Office in the county, with EDA, and also with our members. And that, I will leave it. We're not asking for any money this time around, so that's always a pleasant thing to hear, I know, from a board perspective. At this point, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have, and I'm sure Brian can fill in some details that I may have left off if I did.
Any questions?
Have you all thought about touring the county?
Yeah, that's probably...
Touring the county.
Well, probably our next big project that I would like to see. We have little wins that I'm always trying to grab because it's always good to get those little wins. But probably our next big project will be a driving tour,
yes,
so that people can do that kind of at their leisure.
Oh, no.
And yeah, we can break that up. We can. There's very cheap ways for us to do that and still do it very effectively and very professionally. So that's pretty much kind of that's next on my wish list.
Okay.
I'm currently trying to develop a short one for the Shores Mountain Hill community for folks that might be out that way, just because that's my wheelhouse and I know that area pretty well. I figured I might do a loud truck going by. I figured I might do that for a little newsletter that the FDL key classes, alumni class is working on. But, you know, that could be something that could be, you know, further expanded and tied to a map and, you know, tied into other driving tours within the county. But, you know, there's lots of great opportunities that we can get keep folks here in Fluvanna and share with them our historic and cultural and natural resources.
It's funny you bring that up. Today I was riding around with one of my kids in the Behind the Wheel School, and that's the route that I take. We go down by the Rosenwald School and then drive down by your home place and just make that loop back through there. And he was amazed. He's like, oh my gosh, I had no idea this type of stuff existed in Fluvanna County. And it was just really cool to watch him get excited about seeing some of the things that we have.
Fluvanna's got a lot to offer, and we might be a small county in terms of area-wise, but you know, there's that county that we stretch from the James River all the way up to Zion Crossroads, and there's a lot of neat things to see and to do.
Absolutely. thank y'all so much for everything you guys are doing.
Thank you.
We do appreciate it. And I've not forgotten about you, Mr. Sorrell. Football finally ended. I'll be calling you. Stop by one afternoon.
Very good. Thank you.
All righty. Families First Coronavirus Response Act Extension, Ms. Snow.
Yes. So, as you guys may remember, back in January, we touched on this. So, we need to discuss and decide if the county should continue to provide the optional FFCRA leave, which is the 80 hours of COVID time. So, the Rescue Plan Act of 2021 did extend and expand the FFCRA. In a number of different ways. First, it extended the deadline beyond March 31st, as we had anticipated. It's now been extended to employers with less than 500 employees. If the employers continue to decide to opt into the program, then that would be through September 30th, 2021. Any employer that does voluntarily pay the paid leave benefit may continue to receive dollar-for-dollar tax credits for the FICA taxes on wages paid, but there's also a lot of unknowns and strict provisions that could forfeit that tax credit. Next slide, thank you. In addition, employers with less than 500 employees should also be aware that there's also very substantial provisions that have also been expanded, which gives employees the right to have additional sick leave and family leave, which is they would also not only have the 2 weeks of sick time, the 10 weeks would go up to 12 weeks, so that would be a total of 14 weeks of family leave. So if we decide to reset the sick leave, it would actually go back up to 80 hours. It would not be what they have left over. It would totally reset, give the employees 80 hours again of FFCRA sick leave. In addition, if they go out and leave, they would be out for 14 weeks as opposed to 10.
And, you know, with some of this, too, you know, it's kind of a little catchy, but, you know, employees to go out on this, there's not a whole lot of provisions that the county really can put in place that would limit someone going out on FFCRA. So, you know, to go out for up to 14 weeks on the operation is somewhat of a hardship on the operation. Now I see the flip side of that of saying, well, you know, the county's open and, you know, we're doing things and you know, our employees in jeopardy. The one thing I would say is, you know, the county has had the opportunity for all employees to be vaccinated. We've had multiple attempts for employees to be vaccinated. And so, you know, after looking at what some other localities are doing, looking at private sector employees, you know, talk to Christine Hoffman with Fred's office a little bit as far as some of the regulations with it. You know, it's our thought that it would probably be not a good recommendation to continue this.
Well, it would mean that they would have up to 3.5 months of paid leave, right?
Yes.
And having had everybody
What's that?
I said most of us have had the vaccine. We work for the county, so.
Yes, we have had numerous opportunities to get the vaccination, and so like I said, you know, could you get it, or maybe some different mutant form comes out, you know, maybe so. I don't know, but again, I would almost rather deal with that on a onesie twosie basis than countywide. And I don't know, Ms. Snow, what's...
I agree. You know, reaching out to other localities, everyone that I've spoke with has not reset it, and no private sector that I've spoke with has.
And some jobs, if you're at that non-union, have somebody to cover what you're doing. I mean, have a substitute, and you can't substitute for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you, there are. I mean, you know, there are some arguments to be had. You know, one discussion was, well, you know, we were kind of closed to the public before, but now we're open to the public. Well, you know, we had it in place prior. Well, there really wasn't an option before. That was kind of a mandatory thing.
Yeah, through March, right?
Correct. It was really through December. The board approved to do it solely on the board's dime, necessarily through March. But again, through December, that was really a mandatory thing. We didn't really have a say whether or not we wanted to do it or not. It was just what we had to do. Now this is an optional piece. So again, we're not looking. Well, again, if the board wanted to go move forward with this, going against, you know, what our recommendation is, we would have to bring something forward to the board. But again, after speaking with Ms. Snow, myself, and just kind of talking some of the legal components of it, we're not recommending to continue it. No, you don't. It's just kind of giving you a heads up. It's something that came out. It's optional, and I wanted to give the board at least an opportunity to hear it out. And you know, if the board disagrees with my recommendation, then that's fine. But
well, I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
I think on a one-by-one basis is probably more cost effective.
Yep.
Mr.
Weaver?
No.
All right. So, we can now move forward with Jay, the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021.
So the new American Rescue Response Plan Act of 2021. So again, $1.9 trillion total stimulus package, $350 billion went to states and local governments. The state portion of the funding is $195 billion. $1.25 billion minimum was distributed equally among the 50 states, and then there's a formula for how it gets distributed throughout there. Kind of drilling down a little bit more, the local portion of the funding is $130 billion. So that is equally divided between cities and counties. So if you see here for cities, they got $65 billion, but since we're not a city, we'll focus on for counties. Counties too also got $65 billion, and it's based on county share of population. That's how the number comes up for the counties. So when you're talking about Fluvanna's estimated allocation is a little over $5.3 million. Previously, the two amounts we got, I think it came out to $4.8 million. Now we have another allocation that's going to be coming to $5.3 million. The funds will actually come in two different kind of what they call tranches. You'll get one half of it 60 days after an enactment, and then the second piece will be about a year later. Just kind of looking at some restrictions on ineligible uses, restrictions on uses, cannot be used to directly or indirectly offset tax reductions or delay a tax or tax increases, and some of this is kind of more so for larger state, cannot be deposited into a pension fund, and then funding available through and must be spent by the end of calendar year 2024, so December 31st, 2024. So we've got, what did I say? Well, it's about, you know, two and a half years to go through these funds, and so that's a good amount of time. So looking at eligible uses under A, and again, just like everything with this, there's still a lot of proof in the pudding and the details, which haven't been 100% released yet. But again, for A, response to the public health emergency with respect to the virus, again, helping negative economic impacts, assisting households, small businesses, nonprofits, you know, aid impacted industries, tourism, travel. Under B, a piece of it, respond to workers performing essential work during the COVID-19 public health emergency by providing premium pay to eligible workers of the state, territory, or tribal government that are performing such essential work. Under C, C talks about a reduction in revenue. You know, we can use this to offset a reduction in revenue, but there's very, and I could have Liz chime in on this, but there's, she's been sitting in on some of these meetings more, there's some very specific information as far as how you have to compare what revenue you had.
This is one of the items we're still working out, and that they have, all the various organizations have gone back to Treasury and asked, can you give us a very specific, because originally it was comparing it to 20, which is not really fair, to the FY21 budget, which is not really fair, because most localities had already reduced their budget in the light of COVID. So there's been requests for a little more clarification. Can we go back to FY19 to really get a fair comparison of what was the reduction in revenue? So we're still waiting on clarification on exactly how can we determine how much revenue we lost.
Yeah, and honestly, from the county standpoint, I'm not sure that you would see a huge reduction in revenue if we even did.
We actually fare better than the majority of counties.
Yeah.
Mostly because we don't have a lot of travel and tourism.
Yeah.
And a lot of the taxes that are affected by those we don't have, so.
And then D, under eligible use, it says to make necessary investments in water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. So, you know, I think with some of the discussions coming up, and you know, there's you know, some things we've done previously. If we have some of those businesses that are you know, maybe still in dire need, you know, I'm curious. I'm curious a little bit about B, what some of the premium pay they talk about, really drilling down into the details on that. But we certainly know there are necessary investments in water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. Broadband infrastructure for sure.
Can we do that office building that we started and didn't?
So that's a good point. You know, that's some of the things we're looking.
There have been questions asked about that. Several other localities have asked that same question, and they're another item we're still waiting on a lot of clarification. I will say for this act, Treasury has come to all of the various agencies, the finance agencies and county agencies, asking for how can we do it better this time to avoid the problems. So they're really trying to smooth some of these questions out ahead of time, so we have better guidance. And as far as infrastructure, as far as new buildings, that is the question that's been asked. It's also been asked about the water and sewer repairs. Several other localities have asked, can we use it to do things similar to like the well repairs we need to do? Might be an option for those funds also.
So again, once we get more details, we will certainly inform the board. Nothing I think that we need to pull the trigger on right at this moment, although, you know, we'll have to see. I think in probably the next, you know, 3 months with some of this stuff, we may have some potential uses. But like I said, we'll find out more on the details too. And like I said, we haven't even gotten notification that we're receiving the funds yet or when we're going to receive the funds.
My question would be, can we reimburse ourselves for the infrastructure that we did? Now, I know we did it pre-COVID, but it was to do the broadband stuff when we gave the incentives to Firefly. And
I don't know if we can.
I don't know, because that was earlier.
I don't think so, because again, those are still federal funds. If maybe we did it out of our own pocket.
Well, we did pay them.
Oh, I see what you're talking like CVEC.
Yeah, 375.
No,
because that was beforehand.
Yeah, that's know. No, that would be.
That's what we get for being ahead of the game.
Yes, but again, maybe depending on what happens with Dominion and Firefly, maybe there's an opportunity for some use of it there.
To recover it somewhere.
Yes,
and my question would be, I mean, it talks about. Would that 5% that we're doing this year be considered in there?
No. Well, again, this is where we really need some good guidance, better guidance than we received last time on clarity on what right. each one of these means.
And I will say for me, there is a limit on how much each employee can receive for that premium pay.
Yeah.
There's a limit per hour pay and a total amount that they can receive limit.
Yep. So, like I said, no action here tonight. Like I said, I know I told the board we were getting 5.3. I just wanted to give you a little more, a tiny little bit more detail. Like I said, we still don't have a lot, and there's more to come.
And it's good through the December of 24?
December 31st, 2024.
Three and a half.
Oh, yeah, it's 3.5, yes.
Because it's all of 24.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it's 3.5 years that we're going to spread that out.
Yeah. So it's a long period of time. And the schools also, they're getting their own...
I want to say, to my head, it's close to $2.5 million.
Yeah, I think they're getting their own direct funds too. So. Yep.
Yes, sir. All right. Any other questions or anything? All righty. Let's head towards the consent agenda. K, minutes of March 10th, 2021, Ms. Elise. L, minutes of March 17th, 2021, Ms. Elise. M, CRMF, FCPS. Asphalt Repair Central Elementary, Mr. Striblin. N, FY21 Social Service Revenue Reduction, Ms. May. O, FY21 Social Service Additional Revenue, Ms. May. P, Approval of FY22 CSA Provider Agreement, Mr. Mullen. Q, Accounts Payable Report for February of 2021, Ms. McGyver. Anything we need to pull? No, Weaver?
I'm all right.
All right, do we have a motion?
I'm looking for that motion here on that. Let's see that. I had it marked, now I can't find it. We had the figures, budget part.
Oh, it's, wait, I looked at it, shucks.
What the?
It's Q. It's right at the bottom of Q.
There you go. Very good. Okay. Mr. Chairman, unless anybody has any questions.
No, sir. Go ahead.
I move the accounts payable and payroll be ratified for February 2021 in the amount of $2,146,653.25, and also that items A through Q be approved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. I will tell you, when I was riding around today, the young man, he was totally awed by some of the things that we were able to look at and see. But then I also had looked at my book and said something about us paying out $2 million. He went, what? That got his attention too, Mr. Weaver. Number 10, unfinished business, R, FY21 budget discussion, Mr. Donald.
Yeah, so board, like I said, I don't know how much the board wants to get into the budget, but like I said, and I don't know if there's a lot of changes. So one, I can tell you from staff standpoint, we don't have any changes from our standpoint at this point. We don't have any additional revenue from the commissioner or anything like that. Nothing else came in. We don't have any changes in the budget. So the budget that the board advertise, and I'll just pull it up right now, and then if we get into the nuts and bolts of it, I'll have Ms. McGyver pull it up. But again, you know, the budget that was put out there was at a residential real estate tax rate of 88.4. Again, personal property, public utilities, and machinery and tools all stayed the same. Going back to the budget balance sheet, let me make this a little smaller. Oops.
Well, I had one question, sure, that somebody asked me, and I left my budget book in the thing, and I know there's a reason for it. Non-departmental went way up. And I know that's because we moved other stuff into it, and I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah, so if you look in, actually, I've got to respond to someone about that too. Let me hide this. So under non-departmental, remember last year we had a fairly big savings in non-departmental. It was only 84,000. Remember, we saw a big savings in insurance of about 357,000. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we've kind of got some standard amounts that are in non-departmental. So it wasn't very big last year because we had big insurance savings. Well, this year in non-departmental, remember, we budget if there's a pay wage, if there's any health insurance increases, and again, we kind of have this standard non-departmental amount in there every single year of around $275,000 to $300,000, which is BOS contingency, personnel contingency.
That includes insurance and the raises.
Yeah, so some other things. So again, that's kind of a standard amount. So that's really the biggest increases. We had big savings in 21, and you know, to 357 to the opposite, and now we have a little increase in insurance, and then the staff pay plan wedge. And remember, this figure is not offset by the revenue we get elsewhere. So that's why, you know, you're just comparing the expense to the expense.
Thank you. I knew it was a good explanation.
Yep. So like I said, I mean, I don't know if the board wants to get into budget discussion. I just had it in there because I didn't want to not have it available for discussion if the board wanted to discuss it.
I don't have anything. I mean,
yeah, the only one thing I think I want to bring up really quick, and not in any big major fashion here. So one thing I did, you know,
that's the sheet you just gave us.
Yeah, you'll have this sheet that shows kind of all the debt service falling off in the project. One thing I did just to provide a little clarity, when the Fluvanna Review reported on you know, the budget, they said there is $16.5 million for a new county admin building, $16.5 million. Well, that's not the amount. So going back to the space study and looking at the amounts and kind of plussing them up a little bit, really the allocation is more of this. It's about $5.5 million for a new county admin building. It was about $7.3 million for a social services building. And then renovating the old admin building to combine it with the courts building was about $1.6 million. And then renovate the old DSS building to some various uses is about $2 million. So again, those amounts come up to the $16.5 million. Just for clarity for the public, that the 16.5 covers a lot of different functions and buildings. And like I said, those were some estimates we got, you know, about 2 years ago, and we hope those are, you know, are still pretty current from the architects that we got. And again, you know, we had some other things in here we put in for Abrams, Carysbrook, Parks and Rec, you know, had some equipment, buses. So the $25 million was the total. The one thing that I just want to just bring to the board's attention, so in my original budget, I had some items that I was funding out of cash. For instance, the secure Sally Port at $75,000, the heart monitor replacement at $100,000, school safety vestibules at $125,000, and actually the school safety vestibules, since they're applying for a grant, I think they only need $75,000 now. And then there was discussion about the middle school Annex 4 bleachers and then school transport vehicles. So you have these amounts here, it's about a little over $500,000. That's not really included in this $25 million, but it doesn't mean that once we maybe get some more clarity on some costs on this stuff that it couldn't be included in there or offset with something. Again, you know, the board just said put $25 million and that's kind of the amount going forward, and $25 million would go a long way, and I think we could probably find some efficiencies and some cost savings in some of these numbers. If this
I'm
is
just pointing that we don't have the registrars.
So
one of the primaries, huh?
No, the registrar would go in the new admin building.
Okay.
Yeah, no, the registrar, that, yeah. So in the new administration building, the way that the architecture firm, when they came out to do the space utilization study, you know, you had the registrar goes in there, everyone that's currently in the county administration building, the treasurer and the commissioner would go in the new administration building. I think Public Works may or may not have gone in there. But again, you had a lot of kind of light functions that were going into
that
there.
That answers the question.
Yeah.
I think it's very good.
So again, there are some things that were not included in the budget, but it doesn't mean we can't squeeze them into the 25.
I mean, you know, frankly, you have monies that are coming in from the American Response Act, too. So
yes.
I think those things will find their way through.
Yeah. And I think you're correct. I think there are some things that are coming through, and maybe there's some offsets in what we're doing. But again,
and that doesn't include the $2 million that we're getting back from social services for the building.
No, and remember that's going to be over.
That's spread out over time, but yeah. it's still money coming
still
in.
Money.
There's still money coming
in. It is.
Yeah.
When you take in that, and you take in the $50,000 that we spend each year on the registrar's office.
Yep.
I mean, that's $100,000
yep.
or more a year.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in there.
So again, I don't have anything, any new updates. That's the only thing I just wanted to bring to the board's attention. But budget-wise, everything is status quo from our concern, unless the board had anything they wanted to talk about.
And my only thing was what I talked about before. I'd love to sit down with the schools or talk to the schools about trying to redo that track at the middle school so that we could use that for the community.
Yeah.
You know, if we did that, I would definitely say we'd have to say this needs to be open to the community so that people from the community can go in there and walk or run or whatever.
So again, so nothing's changed, you know. So next week we have the public hearing, and I think because we have a pretty light meeting, we'll have some time if there's any changes or any further discussion after the public hearing, and then the week after that we have budget adoption. So that's kind of the schedule at this point. One thing I was going to say with it, and kind of getting off slightly off topic, but with it being a light meeting next week, you know. Staff and the two redistricting committee members, Mr. Weaver and Mr. O'Brien, we met yesterday to discuss some things, you know, discuss some scenarios. So I was wondering if the board would be fine if we had maybe a little redistricting kind of discussion, so we can kind of show the board, the whole board, what we discussed yesterday with some proposals. I know planning department, they got some new software. So we're trying to figure out some numbers. You know, we already have some numbers for, you know, what things would potentially need to move, and just kind of give the board as a whole a sneak preview.
Well, you know, the community is really interested in the redistricting, so will we be able to get that out to them on the agenda so that they will know
we're
going to be discussing?
We could have the agenda out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I've heard some rumblings just through the grapevine that the state is going to say, since the numbers haven't come out, to wait and do it next year. Has anybody heard anything to that effect?
I don't know how you can do it next year when there's elections this year.
Well, I understand that.
I'm just saying. You know.
But they also are supposed to get stuff out to us, and they haven't.
They're still saying September for the data. The raw data will be maybe available in August, and whatever the Division of Legislative Services is doing, they're still saying September for that. So I don't see how they can possibly, and they can't, they won't have it done in time for the November elections.
So
I don't understand how you can move on when
when you just don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we've got, again, so budget wise, I think we're done with the budget here then, so we can.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let me don't say that. So yeah, again, if the board, I think it would be good. We gave Mr. O'Brien and Mr. Weaver kind of a sneak preview of kind of what was being contemplated. You know, we had just some ideas looking at where some numbers were going to be. And then I think if we can get planning to, they're getting their software, we might be able to get some better numbers as far as where some of the changes are occurring and some things that we have to change. So I would like to add maybe an item of discussion at the next meeting on the 14th if the board was interested.
Are you going to discuss some of it this evening?
Well, I wasn't planning on it because I don't necessarily know if we have enough of the information at this point. I mean, I could.
We weren't going to, and then we weren't going to, and.
Well, again, because we were hoping to get some more numbers from planning staff.
I think the board needs to know where you are right now.
Well, I could easily bring it up and show you.
We should shouldn't be, if this one, there are too many people who want to hear these discussions.
Well, I mean, this is just preliminary. The big one will be next. The big one will be the next time that we discuss it.
Well, I mean, basically, we're going to be discussing the same thing twice, plus whatever numbers.
We would never do that here.
No, I know. I don't think you're going to gain that much more between now and next week.
Right.
That it isn't worth just waiting until next week.
Exactly.
In my opinion, but, you know.
Mr. Weaver?
Well, I thought we had settled that we were going to say something, but I really, it's up to you all. You changed your mind since we last talked about it, so if you want to change it now, you have that right there.
Well, no, I mean, because we had talked about potentially talking to the board about it yesterday, but again, after we got back and trying to see what information we could really get in time, I mean, we could show the board exactly what we showed to you, but we were hoping to have a little bit more information, and we just don't have it at this point. So it would be better if we could
wait. What information do you not have that you're thinking about?
Again, there's some areas where we're looking at potentially making some changes. We need to kind of know the numbers of households that are in certain areas so we have a better idea.
You don't have any idea?
No, we don't. We don't.
I recommended that we wait until we have more information myself because I just feel like it doesn't make sense to...
Okay, then maybe they'll be doing things over again. Then it might have helped, and that's what I was thinking.
And this way, then,
some extra work.
And then this way too, Mr. Weaver, what we can do is, like I said, we didn't really have any of the redistricting discussion on here. We've got an agenda.
Well, we know that.
We have a light agenda ready to go for next week. We can add that on there, and so the public sees it's on there.
It gives them a chance if they want to tune in, that they can tune in and listen to it.
Yeah. So.
All right. Okay. So. Now we'll go forward with the S, local allocations for federal CARES coronavirus relief funds.
So under the existing amount of funds, we don't have a lot of funds left.
Down pretty low.
It's down pretty low. I just had...
If you take out what's allocated, we only have about $36,000 left.
Yeah, so we don't have a whole lot left from the first piece, unless the board had anything they wanted to discuss.
I got ready to say something dumb.
We're not required to spend it down.
Yeah. Well, if we don't...
Not by December.
We have until December.
So, there's nothing pressing right now.
8 months.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nothing pressing. If anything we need.
Well, and we're just buying supplies and those sorts of things.
You can come up with it right now, right?
I'm going to be quiet because maybe I'm going to say something I shouldn't say about vacation. But anyway. All righty. So we'll move forward with any new business. Okay, seeing none, I will now go to open the second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board, please state your name, address, keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time?
I see Chris Ailey is there, but he's the only non-employee.
Is there anyone, if you want to speak, hit *6 to unmute yourself. And hearing none, I will now close second round of public comment. Mr. Weaver, or Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Durant County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing investment of funds from legal matters.
Now, question. Should we discuss what was on our monitor at the beginning of the meeting about the subdivisions and all? Is that going to be included in any discussion in closed session?
No.
Okay.
All right. Do I have a second?
Got
a
second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We're now in closed session.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned to the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that the best of each member's knowledge, one only public business matter lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A8, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion that was proposed. closing was convened or heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. You're now out of closed session. Do I have a motion to adjourn? Oh my goodness, they are jumping at it. Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now adjourned. Thank you.